this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So, have you seen any films?
Ooh, well, I should ask you that. You asked me that last week. Have you seen any films?
Well, I have seen some films.
Oh, have you? Well, tell us about the films you have seen.
Well, I've seen a film.
Oh.
I saw Chronicle.
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 Yeah, it's kind
sounds vaguely rude.
It's kind of a
hitting the Chronicles. Is that what it's about?
It's your 10-year-old brain speaking. it's kind of a found footage film. But dealing with these kids, they're kind of these teenagers.
I've heard of this.
They find a meteorite and they touch it, and it gives them crazy
powers,
telekinesis powers.
It was
pretty good. I mean, it's obviously shot on fairly cheap budget, but the special effects are pretty good. I like the way it deals with superheroes. You know, if people were superheroes, they wouldn't go around saving people from burning buildings. They'd probably just do what they do in this film, just play pranks on people, and you know.
Well,
it's a bit more of a realistic take on it.
Until one of their uncles was shot in a burglary that they could have prevented, and they will realise that great power comes with great responsibility.
Exactly. Well, that's the interesting thing about this film. One of the kids has a very abusive father and an ill mother, and because of his upbringing, he sees things from a very different point of view from the other people. So, yeah, it's a good film. Maybe one for the podcast.
Maybe. Okay. Well, funny enough, I saw a superhero film.
Did you know?
Yes, more traditional, though. I saw Man of Steel, the new Superman film.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's quite an obscure comic book character called Superman.
Yeah.
He has superpowers, super breath, super eyes.
Sounds a bit far-fetched.
Super strength, super skin.
Super skin?
Yeah, he's got super skin to sort of bounce bullets off him. That's super skin, isn't it?
That's pretty super.
Yeah. Also, super flight. That's just flight, really, isn't it? it was okay.
It's got quite mediocre reviews.
Yeah, it felt quite empty.
Mm.
I think, what's his name? Is it Snyder? Zyder? The guy who directed Watchmen directed this.
Zack Snyder, yeah.
Yeah, and I found the exact same issue with the Watchmen. It was just kind of, there's an emptiness, a soullessness to it. And I just think they went way too big in this film. There's so much destruction.
Mm.
It's like a third film, not a first one thing. There's too much destruction. At the end, it's supposed to be that Superman is accepted by everyone.
Yeah.
And if actually that happened, you'd be terrified of him. He doesn't really have that overtly heroic moments in it, where everyone can, the kind of traditional everyone stands around and starts to applaud him,
because
it's actually really ambiguous all the way through.
Not so good.
No.
I've read a good quote in one of the reviews. It said that they use more special effects than God used to create the earth.
Lol, a lens flare. Oh my gosh. He just needs to improve his camera technique, because it's obviously just constant lens flare on everything.
So, one brilliant movie and one slightly disappointing one.
Well, we'll see about Chronicle.
It's good. Anyway, this week we're delving back into the mists of time, going back all the way to 1989.
1989?
I know, 1989. So, when everyone had curly haircuts very wide shoulder bells.
Mobile phones of the size of horses. But you had to carry you used to use your phone horse to carry your phone around.
Exactly. Imagine those dark times.
it was crazy.
And then imagine the beautiful Meg Ryan
coming along like an angel,
galloping on a pony of light, and behind her is the evil troll Billy Crystal, dragging his knuckles.
Oh, Billy Crystal's not an evil troll. I think that's quite strong.
Okay, maybe I'm taking it a little bit too far. Anyway, if you hadn't guessed, we're talking about When Harry Met Sally.
Yes, When Harry Met Sally, a film I'd never seen.
Mm.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
But when did you see it?
I saw it. I have a feeling I saw it on TV not that long after the network premiere. So it must have been like 92.
Was that? That'd be probably a bit soon. Probably nearer 93, 94.
Something like that, yeah. So I have very, very vague memories of the film. So it was quite interesting. When I watched it this time, it was almost like watching it for the first time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Particularly because they're all kind of 30-somethings in this film. And now I'm a 30-something.
I mean, like, the main kind of part of the film, they are 32, 33, both characters.
Exactly. Which is a 13-year-old I found difficult to grasp.
Yeah, that might as well be a million years old. It's meaningless to a 13-year-old. But to us, it has a certain resonance, doesn't it?
It does. In fact, I found the film quite melancholy.
Yes, you said that, didn't you? Yeah. It wasn't overly...
It's billed as a romantic comedy. I found there to be very little comedy.
There is certainly a heart of sadness to it.
Yeah. It's like, the you know, one minute this man's in love with this woman, and then 5 years later, oh no, we split up. Oh, now I'm getting divorced. Oh, my wife's left me. Oh, God, I now I've got to have kids. It's like, oh, God, I'm getting too old. You know, it's like, God, it's just misery, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll talk more about that later in the podcast. Let's do the pitch and plot.
Okay, so what's the pitch?
I would say this is like a Woody Allen squash.
A squashed Woody Allen?
Well, no, more in a sense like orange squash. It's a kind of like diluted Woody Allen, I would say.
Yeah, I get that.
That sounds like I'm being overly critical, but I don't actually mean it in a massively critical way. I was saying it feels a bit like a Woody Allen film.
Mm.
Set in New York. Mm. Oh, cool. Another New York film.
Another one to add to our canon.
Yeah. When we go to New York next year and we watch all of these films again. it has the, you know, lots of characters just talking about their feelings, talking about relationships and love and romance. A little bit like Annie Hall in many ways, but I think the big difference between this is that we see much more of the woman's side of.
Yeah, Woody's not very good at representing the female of the species.
He's very much, his characters are about, well, not so much now perhaps, but so, well, even to some extent they're usually proxies for him, but they're very much about him, and the women are just about how they relate to him.
Mm.
Whereas this film very much is Harry and Sally.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And Meg Ryan's fantastic in the role. I think she gives as easily as she gets and all that kind of stuff. She's fantastic.
So what's the basic plot?
The plot is Harry and Sally meet for the first time just after they graduated from the university, and they share the driving across a trip to New York. Cuts to 5 years later, and one of them's just about to get married, and the other one's just started a new relationship, and then it's 5 years after that, and then they're both single. And then it's when about them deciding they're just going to be friends and their friendship, which of course turns into love. I mean, it's a romantic comedy. It's a Hollywood ending. Yeah. You can guess what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, although interestingly, they originally weren't going to have that ending.
Really? That's interesting.
They were going to have the ending of just them accepting it probably wouldn't work and going their separate ways. Because the whole, I mean, I'm sure you've heard it again, can men and a man and a woman just be friends?
Yeah, I mean, that's the real kind of hook for this film. Like, you know, Indecent Proposal with his, would you sell your wife for $1 million or that kind of stuff, you know. Not on today's exchange.
I'm sure you've brought up Indecent Proposal before. Well, obviously funny, it had quite an impact on you as a young man.
It's one of those films, it's like, that's just the perfect hook.
Yeah, I suppose, and so. It's something you could talk about in a dinner party.
Exactly. And
it's a moral question or a discussion point.
It's one of those films, you know, it comes out and then it gets blanket coverage from the newspapers because it's like, oh, you know, a moral quandary or whatever. And it's the same with this film. It's like, could you be friends if you're a man and woman? Something that you can talk about.
Do you think that's changed slightly?
What do you mean?
I think I get the impression, maybe rightly or wrongly, that things have changed slightly, that opposite sex friendships are much more common than they perhaps were back then.
And what do you base that on?
I think it's actually, to be honest, I think it's been informed by popular culture. I think things like, you know, it's a funny thing to say, but our generation, when we were 15, 16, 17, Friends was massive, showing a group of dual gender group of friends. Yeah. And I think that influenced people. And I think actually that led people to make an effort to have different gender friends.
I can imagine that. I mean, there's other popular cultures like New Girl and things like that. There's plenty of sitcoms and shows where there are men and women who are friends. Yeah. I remember back in 2000 when I lived in Spain for a bit, and I was living with two other guys and a girl. And when we went to get the apartment, I remember the people we were talking to saying, oh yeah, we're just friends, we're living together. They were incredulous that a woman would choose to live with three guys who wasn't going out with any of them. It was just really difficult to explain to, you know, they didn't seem to get it. So, you know, perhaps things have changed.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, I think it seems much more of a bigger deal to this film. Whereas, I would just say, yeah, they can't be. Whereas the massive quandary in the film. Like, yeah, they can't be, it's fine.
But I can see it's a good talking point. There's a great line in it where I think one of the characters, Joe, Sally says to him, you know, do you think men and women can be friends? She said, oh, yeah, sure. I don't have any female friends. Yeah.
Did you enjoy the film?
I found it a bit mediocre, to be honest. I kind of, I was interested. I was interested in it, but it didn't make me laugh. I think there was like one bit in the whole film that made me laugh, which I'll probably mention a bit later. But I found it melancholy. It's all about failed relationships, really.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't surprise me if they did change the ending to kind of...
Yeah, it kind of makes... It's very much a Hollywood end, happy ending, isn't it? I can understand why they did it, but... Yeah, I think it perhaps in one way would be a bit more powerful if it, or more true to the rest of the film in a way.
But they spend most of the film, you know, moaning about how they can't find, the characters can't find anyone to love, or when they do, they're worried about having kids, all of this kind of stuff. I don't find Billy Crystal that funny, I'll say it out loud. I think he finds himself a lot funnier than anyone else does. But I didn't warm to it at all.
That's interesting you say that. I enjoyed it. I think you're right. There wasn't many massive laugh out loud moments. I wasn't chuckling all the way through. I think I like you say, I found it quite interesting. I think I was interested in just the interactions of the characters.
It's more like a slightly not that funny Woody Allen film.
Yeah, you know. Well, he's done plenty of them.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Well, you can imagine exactly what's that like. Yeah. What that's like, really. So
should we do the trivia quiz?
Let's do the trivia. Warning. Trivia quiz is approaching.
Now.
Okay, question one. What does Billy Crystal call the karaoke machine in the gadget shop?
This made me laugh, because he doesn't call it a karaoke machine. He calls it like a singing machine.
That's right,
singing machine.
Have you seen this? It's a singing machine.
Wow, and when I saw it, I was like, wow, I guess karaoke... hadn't made it to the States. Or maybe, like, obviously the machines had, but the idea as a concept hadn't quite made the leap yet, because obviously they don't have the word karaoke yet.
I imagine it was something like, they probably were called karaoke machines, but they decided not to call it a karaoke machine,
because
no one would know what it is.
Singing machine.
The singing machine. Okay, question two. Who played Sally in the 2004 stage adaptation?
I only know this because I read this on the Wikipedia. Alison Hannigan.
Alison Hannigan, your favourite.
My favourite. Not really. You always say that. Not massively. The girl you liked
10 years ago.
More than that.
It's like your mother giving you your favourite cereal when you were 13.
Yeah, you like this, don't you? Let's just say yes. Yes, she's my favourite girl. Alison Hannigan.
Your favourite ever girl. And question three. What's the name of the woman Harry's dating at the start of the film?
Oh, that's good, because he forgets himself. Is it Anne? Alison or Anne?
No, it's Amanda.
Amanda. I knew it began with an A.
Amanda. See? Exactly. It's how easy it is. How easy it is to forget.
Okay, my questions. Okay, question one. What university are Harry and Sally leaving at the beginning of the film?
Oh, no, it's University of Chicago.
It is indeed. How long a drive is that from Chicago? A day, something like that?
They said 18 hours in the film.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
It's a long way.
It's a long way, yeah. Question two. Billy Crystal, of course, is known for his Oscar presenting.
That's what he does, isn't it?
Pretty much. How many times has Billy Crystal hosted the Oscars?
Oh, my God. Complete guess, 12.
I was just about to say one either side, and unfortunately it's 9.
Oh.
So, second only to Bob Hope, who did 18.
Wow.
Yeah, so I don't think Billy will probably match Bob Hope's record.
They love their gentle humour at the Oscars.
They do. To be fair, Billy Crystal is actually quite... He's just perfect for it. Mm-hmm. You know, not too risque, can just move things along. A consummate professional. And finally, what film did Rob Reiner direct next? I'll give you a clue. It's based on a book, and Harry is seen reading the book in the film.
Ooh.
And I'll give you another clue. It's a horror film.
It's a horror film?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I have no idea. Give up.
No idea. It's Stephen King's Misery.
Oh, was Billy Crystal in that?
No, I said Rob Reiner directed.
Oh, Rob Reiner.
Are you trying to imagine a horror film with Billy Crystal?
I was trying to think of a horror film with Billy Crystal. Can you imagine a horror film with Billy Crystal?
I would love to see Misery with Billy Crystal as the author, just getting his legs smashed.
Oh, God! Oh, no, what's happening?
This is just typical. So, Billy Crystal, And speaking of Billy Crystal, I mean...
The ancient Billy Crystal. Fossilised in stone, dug up for the film.
There is a little bit of an age. They play characters in their 30s, and Meg Ryan is in her late 20s in this, isn't she?
They're meant to be like the same age, I think. And they're meant to be like 32 in the main body of the film. But I think Meg Ryan was about 28 at the time, and Billy Crystal was like 42 or something?
41.
You can tell there's an age gap.
Yeah.
The cherubic Meg Ryan versus the crusty old Billy.
Well, of course, Billy Crystal plays himself when he's like a 21-year-old college student.
With a brilliant wig.
I mean, to be fair, Meg Ryan pulls it off. She could pass as like a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like the makeup or something like that, but she looks quite young. Mm. But yeah, Billy. Oh, he's not quite the old troll you described him as, but certainly...
I know, I was taking it a little too far there. He's not an evil troll.
But what... I think we can both agree, they have excellent chemistry in this film.
Yeah.
They just bounce off each other really well.
It works really well. I think that's definitely the biggest hook about this film is that their on-screen chemistry just works. And if you've seen The Holiday starring Jack Black and Kate Winslet, you know when chemistry doesn't work on screen.
There's a great bit in... I think they're in the... Oh, New York. What's the main museum in New York called? Is it the Met?
Met, yeah.
Yeah, and they just do it. He says something like, I've decided to talk in... We should talk in this voice for the rest of the day.
Oh, yes. Pecan pie.
Yeah, like, I will take your pecan pie. And she kind of giggles. And actually, I read this in the kind of notes on IMDb. Apparently, you see her eyes flick to the side where she looks at Rob Reiner, the director, as if to say... Should I carry on? Because she's actually laughed on, like completely naturally, and he's gone like go with it. So she carries on. So you can tell like they do make each other laugh. There is there's something there. There's a spark between them.
Yeah, definitely.
And the kind of what you get from this film, I think a lot of that's down to those two characters just getting on so well.
Definitely. Carrie Fisher, I found unbelievable as her friend.
Oh, yeah.
They're an odd couple on screen.
They are. Because Carrie Fisher plays basically Meg Ryan's best friend in this. And, I don't know why, because Carrie Fisher would have probably been... How old? She would have been roughly the same...
She'd have been a bit older.
How much older would she have been?
Oh, I don't know. I would hate to guess a lady's age.
I mean... The very idea, as a gentleman like you doing that. How coarse of me to bring up the subject.
But I think she was a little bit old. So, the haircuts, though. I mean, Meg Ryan's hair was copied by probably most women, I think.
That kind of bubble blonde.
In the early 90s, kind of 80s and late 80s. And Carrie Fisher just went straight to mum hair.
You're right.
She's just got mum hair. And she's thought, no... That's it. I'm just going straight for mum hair. I'm going to have that haircut for the rest of my life.
I quite like Carrie for every time, she's seen that married guy. She goes, he's never going to leave her, is he? And she's like, no, of course not. he's not, is he? God, he's not. He's never going to leave her. And it comes up several times. I quite like that. There's something about that rang quite true. Mm. Going back to what I said earlier, I mean, there's several bits in this which kind of are all like, this is the first depiction of this type of relationship, the first depiction of this kind of discussion. The bit where the three of them, near the beginning of the film, are having dinner after she's broken up with her fiancé, or is it Joe? That to me, I was like, wow, that's just Sex and the City.
Yeah.
Most episodes of Sex and City are just that conversation.
You can see a direct link between this film and Sex and the City.
The way they're having lunch in New York, and the kind of banter between the three female characters.
Exactly.
So
we can blame Sex and the City 2 on this film.
Well, that's a heavy crime to my hand's door.
But I think one of the things the film does really, really well is actually depicting relationships and the ins and outs and the various little tropes and things that go on in relationships. It does that very well and very honestly.
Well, why did you find it so sad? Because when you kind of meet the characters for the second time, when they bump into each other, he can't remember the name of the girl he was supposedly in love with college. It was Sally's best friend. And she can barely remember.
Exactly.
And that seemed to upset you quite a lot.
It did upset me. I fully admit that. It's like, you cut to 5 years in the future, will I even remember your name? Oh, he's just some guy who did it. Some guy did a podcast with. It was Yon or something.
After our 15 years of friendship, it would take more than 5 years for you to forget.
Well, you know.
Unless you've been in a car accident and a bang on the head.
Exactly. So, you know. But then it is that kind of thing. It's like, God, yeah, cut to 5 years, none of this will matter. Suddenly it makes you think, well.
Well, you have to hum the 101 Films theme tune.
To bring you out of the coma.
Playing one of the podcasts. Awakening. Or send him further into his coma. That's unlikely.
I mean, that is sad. The passage of time, how we forget things and but we move on. You know?
Don't you find that you think you can bear? I mean, I know you. You are a man with the worst memory. You can't. To be fair. You very well might forget my name in the next 5 years. There are things you've done where you're like, no idea. What? And that was like a year ago. How could you have forgotten that?
Always live in the now. Live in the now.
I always found that so weird. When you'd overhear your parents trying to remember the name of a friend of theirs. And they were like, what was this? I was like, how can you do that? And now I can totally understand.
Yeah.
I suppose the more experiences you have, things fade away.
There's also a sense of desperation around the film, you know?
Yeah.
It really is a sense of desperation. Like, we're clinging on to these people and then they disappoint us. And, the same thing happens to Harry and Sally, you know. Sally meets this guy, Joe. They end up kind of almost getting married, but then he decides he doesn't want to have kids, and then they end up splitting up after 5 years. And you're like, God, that's so sad. That is a very sad kind of setup for a film, you know.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Billy. His wife leaves him on his birthday, or just after his birthday. Actually, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
That whole thing about women waiting. I mean, not just women. Men do it as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've all been guilty of that.
You know, I've just never split up with a man.
No, you've been with Jerry for 10 years now.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like one of those things. It's like, well, people do this. It's like, oh, I'll just hang on for their birthday. Just like that's going to make it better. It's like, oh, it's hard. I'll split up with them after their birthday.
And I know,
they'll forget about it. It's fine.
And the ironic thing is, of course, that often that's why relationships end on kind of important days, because the pressure of playing nice, acting nice, being like, oh, this is a lot of pressure. Like Valentine's Day, I bet it's a big day for couples to break up.
Yeah, because I was going to say.
It's a forced romance. It's a little bit like how a lot of people don't really like New Year's Eve because they feel like they have to have fun. Mm,
yeah.
You know, when someone says, declare your love for this person, you then go, I don't love them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It happens all the time.
So, I mean, in terms of that, the film's hit the nail on the head. Exactly. There's a load of things like that where you kind of really think.
I was dumped on my birthday.
There we go. So it really does ring true, but at the same time, that's just really sad. Well, which is why I feel like it's falsely billed as a comedy. It just strips away all the niceties of life and shows it up in its bare, ragged clothes.
There is a element of cynicism in the... Well, no, actually, what the film does well, I think, it has its cake and eats it. It has, for most of the film, this kind of cynical side. But throughout the film, dotted are these kind of little vox pops of elderly couples talking about how they met.
Ah, yeah, I really like those. Although some of them are very badly acted.
Yes.
Those are one of the highlights. In terms of the actual direction of the film, that's definitely one of the things that makes it stand out, these little vignettes of the couples talking about how they met 50 years ago.
I think Rob Reiner is a good director.
He is good. I mean, there were some lovely shot scenes, particularly in the Central Park. Central Park, I mean, that's perfect.
It's thing.
But, you know, some great things with all the autumn trees and in the winter and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's well directed.
I know you mean, though, about the kind of truth about relationships and how they can go wrong. Mm. Where Billy Crystal has that rant, it's with the wagon wheel coffee table. when Sally and Harry's friends get together and they move in together, and Billy's just bumped into. Oh, that's not Billy, sorry. Harry has just bumped into his ex-wife and he just gets really upset. And then he has that thing about, oh, make sure you write your names in your books, because when you come to split up, you'll end up arguing over whose book is whose.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, yeah. That had an impact. The idea that... But that's all. The ultimate truth is that you have to take the risk.
Yeah,
you know, you don't get... There's no great romantic relationship unless you're willing to have your heart stamped on.
Exactly.
And destroyed.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, you know, we still keep going into these relationships when really, you know that in the end, you either split up or one of you dies. That's basically it. There's no other option. You know, there's no third way.
I know. Perhaps darker moments when I was single, I would say that. I said, like, the best possible outcome is that you watch your soulmate die. Or they watch you die. That's the best outcome of this.
Exactly. So, but, you know, when you think of it like that, why are romances so funny? You know, why make this romantic... Should be the romantic commiseration, you know. But then,
well, we need the eggs, Lewis.
We need the eggs. In
the last line of Annie Hall, we need the eggs.
Exactly. But, you know, that's the thing. We're suckers. We're either suckers or it's the triumph of hope over adversity. I'm not sure which one.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the best scenes of the film. Well, let's firstly look at the most famous scene.
Oh, the orgasm scene.
The orgasm scene.
I almost didn't want to talk about this because it's so famous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to the point where the character delivers the line, I'll have what she's having.
Yeah.
Like, when she died, they kind of... Like, they had an obituary about her, about the fact that she delivered that line, and she became famous for that line. And the diner where the sequence is filmed has, like...
Yeah.
Why don't you have what she had? Yeah. I mean, again, I suppose we forget that. Was that the first time someone doing an orgasm in that quite theatrical way was shown in a mainstream film? I suppose it probably was.
But probably more to the point, what conversations did it provoke afterwards? So, did you ever... With me, did you ever...
I mean, the thing I really want to know is, what's an orgasm?
I'll tell you later, after the podcast.
Well, that's kind of creepy.
I'll show you later. Just pop your clothes on the stool.
You said, like, the power of that completely lessened by the fact we've seen it a million times. But I can imagine that when it first came out, that was very funny and shocking, just because it was being so like, what? I can imagine people in the cinema going, oh my god, and laughing, especially and that the killer line, like, I'll have what she's having.
Yeah.
Everyone just laughing. Exactly. Yeah, I can see why it's funny, but. It's just I've seen the joke so many times.
Exactly, you know. Perhaps that's why I'm thinking, you know, I didn't find it that funny because I just know all the jokes already. But, I mean, my other favourite scene was the bit with the taxi. This is the only bit that actually really did make me laugh out loud, which was the... Well, not out loud, more like a... But it was the bit where they're trying to set up their friends with the other person. So Harry's trying to set up his mate with Sally, and she's trying to set up Marie with Harry.
Yeah.
But then they go to the date and the friends end up hitting it off. And then they both kind of take each other to one side and it's like, oh, you know, you shouldn't do anything too quickly. I'll give you his number, but, you know, wait a week or something. And then the guy says, oh, I'll get a taxi. And she's like, oh, I'll come as well.
Yeah.
And they just go, and it did make me laugh.
Yeah.
But, you know, very few other things kind of made me laugh. It was just too sad.
A scene I really liked in the film is at the point where he's at his lowest, where Harry's just sitting by himself and she's gone to the New Year's Eve party. It's towards the end of the film.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sort of trying to convince her, because this isn't so bad. I've got my, is it Murray Moore's cookies? Yeah, it's like the best cookie. and I'm watching the bell drop or the ball drop at Times Square at home. Yeah, this is pretty good. Trying to convince himself. It's that kind of thing where, you know, where, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, where you want to go out and for whatever reason everyone's busy and you can't, and you try and convince yourself that actually what you wanted to do was stay and have a really good night in. You're like, yes, I'm going to cook myself a nice dinner. And then, you know, someone would drop you a text, go, oh, any chance you're free? You're like, yep. And really drop one.
Exactly, I know that exact feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one of my favourite scenes. And I think the overall message of the film idea is that all the failed relationships, all the missteps, all the things you go through, it's just those are just things that you have to go through to eventually get to the one that works.
Ah.
So, you know, like all those relationships end, and I suppose it's sad they end, but if they didn't end, they wouldn't have met, you know, they wouldn't have got together. I broke up with this person, that person, but then if I hadn't, I wouldn't have met the person I am with now.
Yeah, I think, I know what you mean, and I I think I've come across as a bit of an old cynic in this podcast so far, but actually I'm quite a romantic person at heart, and you know, I really do believe in romance and all that kind of stuff. But I just felt the film, it just dwelled too much on the negatives and not enough on the positives. And for that reason, it just came across as a bit melancholy.
Hmm.
You know, relationships can be a bit shit sometimes, but there isn't that many sequences in this film where someone's having a happy relationship.
No, there's not, no. Oh, well. Yeah, like, I mean, ultimately, perhaps some of the stuff is a little bit old now, but I think it's still, it's still an interesting film for its depiction of relationships. Mm. Ultimately, would you recommend the film?
I wouldn't recommend it if you've just split up with someone and you wanted a laugh, because you'd probably be more likely crying by the end of it. But as a kind of Woody Allen light, I think it's got merit. I think it's lost impact over time, like you said, because it's introduced so many things that we now just take for granted. Like the idea of, you know, discussion can men be friends with women. The phrase high maintenance was popularised by this film. Which, you know, now you kind of use all the time, for better or worse. But, you know, it's an alright film. I thought it was alright.
I mean, I would recommend it. I think it's quite fun. It's alright. Yeah, it made me chuckle a few times. Good characters, good chemistry between Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan.
I think that's the main reason for watching it, watching those two.
And, yeah, I'm going to keep banging on this about this, but clocks in at a respectable 1 hour 40. For a romantic comedy, that's all you need.
I think it's not even that.
Something like that, yeah.
It's about an hour and a half. Hour and a half, that's the perfect time for a film.
Yeah, like, God, it winds me up that romantic comedies and things like that are just so long now.
I watched This Is 40... I told you this. I've just told this about this before. My bet noir, This Is 40. Awful film, which somehow, for some reason, everyone seemed to like, all the critics. 2 hours.
Hmm.
2 hours. That's too long for a comedy. Oh, God.
The new Lone Ranger film, apparently, is 2 hours and 20 minutes.
That's ridiculous.
That is just stupid. It actually annoys me. It actually makes me quite angry. That it's strange. I don't understand it.
Ridiculous. Short and punchy. That's what you want. Short and punchy.
Anyway, so our secret sponsor for this week
is
now. There's a little tale behind this, or not a tale, a little explanation. Most usually, we have picked secret sponsors from our Twitter feed, things like other film blogs, or people have made us laugh, or things like that. We do get followed by lots of like low budget films. People basically making these low budget films, and I'm guessing they just follow anyone with film in their Twitter title. But we get so many of these, and I just thought, well, let's just choose one. Randomly pick one. So we've gone for Monstrum. So
we've mostly picked this on the basis that they keep tweeting photos of a very cute dog.
Archie. Hashtag Archie.
So cute, the little dog.
It is very,
little,
very
little
cute.
Little doggy eyes.
So if nothing else, if you just want to see some lovely pictures of a lovely dog, why don't you follow Monstrum and @Monstrum. That's MONSTRUM, and you can look at their website, monstrum.co.uk. Apparently, it's a micro-budget horror comedy, and none of them have ever been bad. So, well, would it be great though if Monstrum became the massive sleeper hit, and we were the first ones to point them out, and they invited us to the premiere, and we got a little bit part in Monstrum 2.
Pure fried gold. That's what I'm gonna say. And you see what I did there?
Yeah, very good.
Anyway, if you've got any films you'd like us to watch, please email us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, 101films, or like us on our Facebook page, 101films.
And have a look at our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
And that's it. Bye.
Bye.
Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher. Oh, she was Terry Hatcher. Back in the day, Terry Hatcher.
Back in the day.